happening, everybody? Welcome in. Episode 12 of the Portland Winterhawks podcast. I'm your host, Andy Dirt Johnson. Excited for this episode. Josh Sikreski is going to join us coming up in a little bit as the Hawks get ready for round two. Everett coming to town. Game one Friday, game two Saturday as the second round of the playoffs gets underway. Joining me, though, to start the podcast, as he always does, is my good buddy, my pal, the voice of the Winterhawks, Nick Merrick. First, Nick, let's start with the most important pressing thing. Who do we have winning the Masters? Who's the pick this week?
It really is the most important thing. It's funny, you and I were talking offline. We're thinking, oh boy, I know we're interrupting our Masters viewing here at the office for you back at home right when you got off of work. You know what? Great question. I don't know. Do you think they're going to go back and are they going to have a repeat there with Rahm? Do you think Scheffler gets it again 22? I feel like my next wave outside of those two big guys is Xander Schauffele. So I'll be rooting for him. My pick'ems certainly are gearing that way. You'll have to ask Josh about it because they do a Masters pool as well with the players. But it was funny for the listeners. I was texting Andy like the last 3 days, this guy or this guy, this guy or this guy. I know this guy's got the insight, and I haven't had, you know, the second half of the season to be able to chance to really watch a lot of golf because the team's been doing on a good run. But you know what's funny? I'm actually excited just to kind of have the Masters on today at my desk, have the Masters on for the weekend games for the series. And it's interesting because the way we'll dive into it, but the way the schedule worked out, we're actually all going to probably be watching the Masters Sunday on the bus going to Everett. So right. That'll be a different experience. So hopefully the Wi-Fi doesn't crap out.
Hopefully there's not like one guy on the Wi-Fi too where his stream is like 30 seconds ahead of everybody else. So he's like reacting to things that happen. Like we got to make sure everybody, you know, pauses and syncs at the right time. So everybody's, you know, seeing it in real time.
The team does have they pay for that package. So the TVs and the bus are connected in with the cable. So as long as there's no, you know, basically tree interference above you, the signal's usually pretty good, especially in the state. So that's the one blessing for the Winterhawks. Appreciative of them of doing that, especially on Masters Sunday. But yes. Who do you have? Who do you have winning the Masters?
Dude, look, Scotty seems like the overwhelming favorite. I do think it's funny that his wife is giving birth at any moment.
Yes.
And he said he's going to leave the tournament if she has the kid. So, like, I
saw that too.
An absolute bombshell hanging over this. Like, he's your, you know, weekend leader, and all of a sudden she goes into labor, and he's like, all right, I'm out of here. It could be madness. Rahm maybe going back to back. I love Xander as well. I can't wait. This is my, like, Christmas as a sports fan every year. I love golf. And so, pumped to be watching the Masters, and pumped to be talking about a second-round playoff series. You mentioned the wonky schedule, Nick, and we need to get into that because I can't even imagine what the week has been like over there for you guys. But let's take a look in the rearview mirror first. You know, I was there, TV game one. We're calling it, and it was a shaky first 40 minutes. They kind of wake up in the third. They explode. Rest was history, a sweep. What were the takeaways? How was the trip to Victoria? What do you make of the way the Winterhawks started their playoff run with a nice little clean sweep in round one?
Well, that was a pretty good synopsis to start the series, Andy. I think you and I saw the most maybe dramatic part of the series in those first couple of periods because we always know there's that feeling out process and the players just turn on a different level when it comes to postseason hockey. So once Portland kind of came back in that game one third period, everything really, really settled down for them nicely. I thought Victoria didn't put up the greatest fight in that second game on Saturday at the BMC. So the Hawks had that 2-0 series lead going to Victoria. And when you get a Portland team that has any lead, like they've been really hungry, they've been able to finish this year. I think that's been the biggest change from, you know, last season to this season is just that knack to get the job done and just don't let teams linger around. Like the core of this group has seen that from both the good and the bads of it. You know, that they were on the side where they played Everett last year in round one. They had a chance to sweep them, then that forced the extra game. They still got it done in five, obviously. Then they ran into the powerhouse Kamloops team. They kind of saw what it took to get it done against them. And the Hawks really couldn't put up too much of a fight there against the Blazers in that second round matchup a season ago. And then you look back prior, the Hawks were up 3-1 against Seattle. And this group that's on the team this year, they don't forget that. You know, it's hard to win that last game of the series. So I felt like when the team went to the island, it was kind of going to be, all right, well, Victoria knows, like, they're going to need to push here in game three. And I thought their best showing came in the third game. But the Winterhawks, you know, still won that hockey game. I think it was pretty evenly matched when you look at the chances. I think Portland had a little bit more scoring chances than Victoria, but that was the first time all year the Royals had outshot the Winterhawks, and they still found a way to not only win the game, but they won every period, too. Yeah. So they never really trailed in that game going into the break. So it kind of just showed the dominance. Everyone just stayed kind of calm. They just stayed to their game plan. Eventually, they found a way to make things work. Power play was good. The physicality was unbelievable. I thought every single player upped it up a notch. The extra hitting there was terrific. In the defensive zone, they helped out Spoonar as much as they could. I thought Jan had a really, really calm and quiet fourth game of the series. I think that first goal, the only goal that Victoria scored, he might want back, but it is on the power play. And then after that, it was one where it's like he recentered himself, he dialed it in, got the job done for the Hawks. So I think it was a good first series, and obviously the biggest thing that came from it is the fact that the team now is going on 8 or 9 days of break, which is always going to help you, because there's anything kind of lingering from that first day. Maybe there's a cramp. Maybe there's, you get those little nicks and bruises. You got that time to kind of work them out, get them back to relatively 100% healthy and get ready for this round two, because the Winter Hawks have been here now 3 straight years.
Yeah, it's a great point on the time off. It's something I think you relish probably this time of year. Your bodies are so banged up, and it's been such a long, grueling season that you get that extended break. It's one of the benefits of sweeping and not having to play another game or not having to take another bus trip. You finish the job, you get to move on to the next round. And now you mentioned it. I mean, the one silver lining is traveling up there Sunday so you can watch the final round of the Masters. But outside of that, man, it was announced. We knew game one, game two, Friday, Saturday. The team announced that. You guys were right on top of it. And then we knew, okay, how in the world is the rest of this going to look? So how can you paint the scenes for us or paint the behind the scenes for us on what that week has been like? Because I can't even imagine how many different phone calls and emails and texts of, all right, when can we get this building? When can we do this game? And Portland fights all year for home ice, and then you don't get maybe that, the Friday, Saturday like you normally would for a game six, potentially game seven. Just how much chaos has it been behind the scenes trying to figure this out and how the schedule is going to look against Everett?
I there's been a little bit of chaos, Andy. Can't lie on that one, but a huge shout out there to our entire operations department for obviously navigating this tough spot. And it's just one of the things where our devout listeners are going to know this before I've even said so, but maybe you're wondering what's going on. It's because at the Coliseum here in Portland, there's a Paw Patrol event coming in. So the Winter Hawks don't have access to their building from this coming Wednesday. So after games one and two of next week, Wednesday, until the following Sunday. So they're basically, there's no ice, there's no access to the rink because it's all Paw Patrol load in and then their event on Saturday night. So that's what kind of kept the Winter Hawks in this weird spot where typically, the way the season would really go, you get that next Friday home game, game five, if you had the building availability. And then because there's no Motor Center access, now you're just kind of trapped into the one building scenario. So you got to get creative with things, which is why that first round series got a little creative as well. Part of that too is because there was a ferry ride involved. But I also know that it was tough with the Winter Hawks having access there too. There was some robotics thing from some high school and think competition here at the Coliseum while we were gone. I heard about it from my coworkers, but obviously I didn't have to hear it because I was over at the Save-On Foods Memorial Center watching some hockey in that game three and four. But I heard it was kind of a fun, ruckus, weird, different energy to get inside the building when you're like, well, usually it's quiet at 10 a.m. and all of a sudden I have robots rolling around the concourse. Like, this is different. And then on the other side of it, Everett, they have a PBR event that takes them out of the building for the middle part of the next week. So that's why there's that weird gap between game three and game four. Neither building was available. Obviously the Winter Hawks would have been technically on that Tuesday or Wednesday, but there's no chance Everett would ever agree on doing three of the first four games in Portland, because that doesn't even guarantee them two home dates in the round. So I think that's where the struggle came in terms of solidifying it. But ultimately it's going to be, it's fine. Like, these are the types of roadblocks you hit. This is the adversity you got to handle. Winter Hawks have been terrific at home all season. So if you keep doing what you're doing on the regular year, you could try to go up 2-0 against Everett. It's not going to be easy, don't get me wrong, but if you go up 2-0 against Everett, you go into Everett, now all of a sudden they have a little extra chip on their shoulder they need to convert in their game three on Monday. And if the Winter Hawks can steal either of that game on Monday or when you get that nice long break then that following Friday, you can get one of those two games in Everett, then all of a sudden the series is no problem, because then even having those three straight in Everett, you kind of know you have the luxury then of having the last two home games at the BMC. So there's a little bit of perch there too. And I feel like Portland's depth in the grand scheme of things, if you have to play game seven, the Hawks and the Silvertips will be playing four games in five nights. Well, I like the Winter Hawks' chances in that situation because they've been groomed for that this season. Mm-hmm. The Silvertips' second half of the schedule has been a little bit lighter. And we kind of know Everett usually only runs 2.5-3 lines. Winter Hawks have no problem running all four. So you're going to have that fatigue settling in about game six or game seven. And it's coming back to Portland. So I think the X factor there could just be this team's depth and having those last two home games if it needs to go that far.
Well, and then not to get too inside baseball, but I saw the schedule was released, and I know you're so right. Like, shout out to everybody who was working their tails off to figure that out. And it's not easy, and you know everybody wants what's best for their team and their organization, and so that's a lot of things, a lot of logs in the fire to try and settle. What's the plan? Because it's such a unique thing where, you know, game three is in Everett on Monday, and you don't play again until Friday night. So are they coming
right
home? What's the thought for those 4 days off? Because that's very rare in the middle of a playoff series.
No, for sure. Absolutely. The team will head up on Master Sunday to Everett in preparation for game three the next night. They'll play the third game Monday night in Everett, and then immediately afterwards, because of the nice travel schedule, as you just mentioned, the team will head back to Portland.
Okay.
So let's say you're pulling into the VMC at 1 a.m. latest, or so on Monday night, Tuesday morning. Then you just have kind of your normal Tuesday, Wednesday skate. Probably a Thursday morning skate would be my imagination. And then, I'd imagine that's the case. Then you drive back up to Everett sometime midday Thursday, and you prep for games four, then five if necessary, Friday and Saturday. So it's okay. Kind of weird. We're going to get a little bit of a up and back for game three, and then games four and five chunked together. But it works out well because then the team also gets back up on the road that long. You still get to skate. Like, the Winterhawk Skating Center is still available, so there's no issues there in terms of getting the ice. It's just the, having the actual games was the problem because the BMC.
Before we dive too much into the kind of the matchup and what you know and what you see from Everett, and you've obviously seen a lot of those matchups this year. I just looking back at that series against Victoria, I thought in game one, one thing that stood out to me was the physicality of Josh Davies and kind of what he brought and the intensity that he plays with, maybe a missing piece that the Winterhawks haven't had on their roster the last couple of years. I thought Kyle Chizowski had a great series and kind of showed his value as a hard worker. Who were some of the guys and performers that stood out to you? I mean, Stefan is the obvious one because of the number of points and goals that he put up. What were some of the takeaways that you saw in that four games that either solidified an opinion that you had coming in or maybe surprised you? What were the takeaways?
Well, we're talking about depth, so I think that was kind of the story of round one as well. It seemed like every time Victoria tried to make adjustments and shut down a line, another line would step up and do something big, whether it was, make a big hit or score a power play goal or score an even strength goal. The team did really well of moving things around and not just relying on one person to get the job done. So I think we saw that in game one. It was kind of a team effort to get out of it. Then you get that James Stefan hat trick, which is always going to set you on the right tone. And obviously, he's tied for the team lead in points going into this one. Luca Cagnoni had a phenomenal first round.
Yes, he did.
Who, by the way, it's the Winterhawks podcast here. I could say this wholeheartedly. He got absolutely snubbed. Absolutely snubbed from the U.S. Division Defenseman of the Year. Still looking at that, it's unbelievable that he wasn't nominated from the U.S. Division, which the U.S. Division coaches, by the way, vote on this. So it's when those all-star voting come in. It's however many first place and second place votes somebody gets, they do that rank. I don't know what the points are exactly. Let's say it's 5 points for first place and 3 points for second, right? Like, right. You get a certain amount of points if you get named by the coaches. So a lot of them put Graham Sword. I get it. When you talk defensive player of the year, I get it. There's a big caveat there. Is it offensive defenseman? Is it strict prowess in the defensive zone? If it was the latter, mind you, I think a different player like a Ryder Thompson or Mark Alscher would be very deserving of that type of award as well.
Yeah, yeah.
For the Winterhawks side. But you have a player in Cagnoni who's done something that hasn't been done in 30 years, and he's not up there. You know what? But obviously, I feel like it's a moot point. Winterhawks fans know the frustration too. I just need the voice because we haven't had a chance to talk since the last podcast. I thought he has a terrific, terrific first round series. Mind you, the other person, terrific hockey player, Graham Sword, but
yes,
his team's out. So if he was such a feared, dominant defenseman, offensive prowess, how are they eliminated here? When they were the higher seed going into round one? Who knows? So I think that was, that twist the knife on me there, Andy. That one frustrates me a lot because now he can't win the defenseman of the year. He's not eligible for that voting, despite leading the league in about 18 categories.
Yeah.
So I feel like those two, obviously Stefan and Cagnoni, were the two-point getters. But then you had Zakreski, who got the job done. You just mentioned Chizowski, him, Buttezoni, and Chizowski. Their line was the best line easily in that Game 4 victory in Victoria. I thought Nate Danielson and Jack O'Brien had some really, really good plays throughout the series as well. Defensively, the team was very strong. Like, you're getting production there from Josh Morey in the offensive zone. You're getting some terrific shots that lead to points from Ryder Thompson. So you're getting kind of guys that step up in different situations to make a factor in all ends of the ice. And that was what was so dangerous for Portland, because it almost kind of had that feeling of James Patrick, the Victoria coach, to be like, well, let's just defend Claussen's line. All right, well, that's no problem. Then Josh Sakresti's going to score 2 goals in the first period. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to combat it, because teams just don't know how to face this type of depth. They haven't seen that, you know, really from many Western Conference teams this year, outside of probably Portland and Prince George. So it's kind of a different beast to handle. I think the team's eager now for round two, and it's kind of one of those, like, who's going to pop off in the second round? We'll see. Obviously, hope you have a good, strong start in game one on Friday, because you know Everett's going to come out hungry. The Winterhawks have done well against Everett this season, but, you know, I love alluding to those stats, but you also have to throw them out in the same regard, because now the playoff lives are a little different. Everything's kind of changed this time of year when you get to April.
Totally, man. At your point, too, of just kind of having the ability to lean on different guys, and you can't just stop one line. I mean, that's why I think we were all excited to see what Portland could do in the playoffs. We know the depth is there, and it showed itself in the first round with a nice sweep, and now we get to see if it carries over to round two. You mentioned the matchups were in Portland's favor against Everett this year, and it's a U.S. division opponent that you see a lot, and it's a team right. That's been they've been in the playoffs seemingly every year for the last decade as well. It's a really well-run organization. For those who have not seen Everett, haven't watched, maybe didn't go to the games when the Silvertips were in town, what are the X's and O's things that stand out in the series? What are the matchups? Who are the guys to keep an eye on? What are kind of some of those first thoughts that jump into your mind once you realize, okay, Portland and Everett in round two?
I think the goaltending matchup will be fun first and foremost. Tyler Palmer for them, Jan Schoonar for Portland. I think they've had some good battles this year, both in the series, but then also in terms of their first round matchups. They were in net for all the games for their teams in round one, so we clearly know what the goaltending matchup will look like there in that game one on Friday. But then also, you know, as much as I was talking about Portland's depth, in terms of the scoring in that first round series, I thought Everett's depth kind of helped get them through. We knew they were a deeper team than that of Vancouver. Vancouver's really just a one-line plus team. They have a dominant first line, yeah. And then it kind of just slowly gets a little bit off. It just peters off after that. They have a terrific 16-year-old who's building up their future. They have some signed guys who are really good. So Vancouver's going to be relevant for sure next year and a couple of years after as well. But I think it's just those 19-year-olds that are leading the way right now for Everett. Like Austin Roos, who's already signed his contract. Ben Hemmerling signed his NHL contract. Those two are for sure the leaders on their team. No surprise to see them leading in points. They both had 3 goals in that first-round matchup with Vancouver. But I think they're just kind of a strong physical team. They like to move with pace too, so they're pretty similar to that of Portland. They could lay some big hits. I don't know. It's kind of hard too, because I haven't had a chance obviously to watch all of their playoff games. I've kind of just seen the snippets and the highlights, and I've rewinded a couple of times to view a couple things, but I don't really have a glimpse of what their playoff game looks like yet with this year's group, because they're interesting. Like I feel like they are a really, really good two-line team. They'll rotate in their third line kind of as needed. They have pretty good special teams play. Their biggest question probably against Portland on the season has been the defensive work. They've given up a lot of chances to the Winterhawks. So if Portland can kind of find their scoring chance in the playoffs, which we all know is hard to do, like mm-hmm. It's not like you're just going to drop the puck and you gotta earn it if you're going to get those scoring chances. That's probably where Portland's going to have their bread and butter in this series is – just getting to the net, having a nose to find the scoring areas. And, you know, even if it's not the greatest shot, just put shots on it. Volume of shots can be big because these two teams, I think, actually coming into this series from the regular year, they were 1-2 in shot 4 per game. Portland was 1, Everett was 2nd. So they like to shoot the puck a lot, which obviously leads to typically more goal scoring. I feel like that was the MO in the regular season. We'll obviously have to see if it transpires, because sometimes when teams do figure things out and they buckle it down defensively and they don't give up as much ice, the scoring can drop a little bit. Like I feel like that's what we saw that in the Victoria series, where almost have a team when they get up, you know, 2 goals, 3 goals, you're almost not trying to prevent, you know, you're not trying to switch your game plan, but you just kind of become more structured. Like you're just going to say, all right, like we aren't going to give up those big plays. We're going to, you know, if you're going to get a goal here, you're going to have to earn it like on a second, third effort. So I don't know. I think we'll see what happens that first game. I feel like that'll tell us a lot, Andy. And just kind of excited to see if Portland keep doing what they did in the regular year against Everett.
Yeah, see if that tone picks up. You're so spot on. I felt like Portland kind of learned that lesson in game one, where there's just not a lot of room out there, man, and every pass has to be tape to tape, and you're just going to get suffocated at times, especially in the neutral zone. It's a different brand, and I thought they adjusted really well – as the game went on. And you know, a lot of those guys have played playoff hockey and they've experienced it before. But when it's been a calendar year since you've been there, it just, you know, probably takes you a couple of periods, couple of shifts, and then you kind of realize, all right, this isn't flowing quite as easily as a regular season game, and it's going to take some adjustments. You know, one of the things, Nick, I did want to ask you about too, is we went into that first round series kind of saying the only question mark, if it even is a question mark, was just the way that Jan was playing late in the season. He was so good this year, and the numbers are incredible, and he's, you know, leading and near the top of the league in a lot of different categories. But the back half of the season wasn't quite exactly what he wanted. What did you make of the way he played in net? Obviously, a sweep, you take that any day of the week. He was tremendous at times. What did you make of his performance in that first round?
Well, I thought it was good. I thought he came back to more of the Jan Schwinna that we were used to seeing probably in November time, right? You know, when he was the reigning goaltender of the month. I thought he had some really good plays. I think there were a couple that certainly leaked through on him just from, Nick Merrick putting on the broadcast, doesn't have to make the save, but I'll comment on it type of scenario. I don't really get his opinion on that one because I know he has such a really, really good reset capability where he's very good mentally, where he could, you know, if one does get let up that I'm saying is a bad goal, he's not going to remember. He just moves on to the next play, and that's why he was so good in game four of shutting things down. So I think his consistency certainly helped. But you're right. I mean, the easy elephant in the room that we started the series with, he had 14 straight starts to basically end the season.
Yeah.
I know he didn't play in game 68, but what was that? Let's call it game 55 to 57 or whatever my math is there. You know, he played all of those games. Like, that's tiring if you're playing the entire month of March and then some into February. So it's, you know, I think it was one of those where he could certainly use this rest right now, which I'm sure the team is taking full advantage of. They had a really good schedule in terms of, you know, being able to break up their practice times. They, after the sweep, they got away for a couple of days. I know some of the guys, speaking of our golf that we started with, they were playing golf around the Portland area on that Saturday. And Friday when we got back from Victoria, so at least they got a couple days away from the rink just to kind of get a reset themselves. And obviously lighter practices once you get into the playoffs. It's more just kind of running through a couple of drills you want to work on and then get off. Like, you know, you don't need to stay on the rink right for 3 hours straight, or, you know, it's never that long. But you know what I mean? I'm over-exaggerating. But just quick, get on the ice, get through your drills in 35, 40 minutes, take a little skate, work on some skills, things if you want, and then get off and, you know, recover basically and prepare your body. So I think Portland, you know, kind of relied on that. I think Spoonard did a good job then too of almost playing that wave out as well, where he knew he was gonna get that workload in round one. And to a degree, it does help a little bit when you have an understanding of what your body's gonna go through when you play those 14 or 15 straight games in the regular season. Then you get to the playoffs and you go, okay, here we go. We're gonna play 3 games in 5 nights or whatever it ends up being. Just make sure you're ready to go.
Your point about him getting a nice break in between this series is great too. That's such a grind, man. 14 straight games, and I wonder how much of that what you're alluding to was Mike kind of getting him ready for that grind of just understanding what his body's going to have to go through and everything. And so great to get those guys a break. Now, I got to ask you the most important question too. Have you gotten a Peaky Blinders hat yet? Is Nick Merrick wearing those during the games yet?
You know what? I did get one.
Yes.
It was funny. Everyone was walking around there saying, you could pull it off really good. So it might have to make another appearance one of these days. The problem is it's hard with our headsets, right? You can't put on with the headset. So
right.
During games, typically no, but kind of leading up to it, at least on that game day, I'll support it with everyone, with the fans and the players. It's pretty cool that at least they jumped onto it. And funny how it just came to be. It was one of those like, well, you know, some of the guys like Peaky Blinders. So let's kind of rock this and go forward with some kind of look for the playoffs. Because they have in years past, so I guess it came together pretty quick, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, Nick, you want to buy a hat? Yeah, sure, no problem.
Why not, man? We need him in, like, the pregame video. We need you when you're hyping the crowd up and you're on the Jumbotron. You got to have the hat on. That's my only request.
Okay, that's fair enough. I can do that.
Anything special going on this week? I mean, I know fans they're jonesing, dude. You get this kind of extended break. It's weird where it's just like, all right, sprint and playoff hockey, and then, okay, now you swept. Now you got to sit around for a week and a half.
For sure.
Anything plan this weekend that's fun that fans can look forward to for game one on Friday night or game two on Saturday?
No, luckily the big thing there is just come and enjoy the hockey. I think that's the number one focus. When you get to the round two, you have a chance to, you know, win this series and go to the Western Conference Final. The Winter Hawks haven't been there since 2015, so big opportunity on the line there. I know they need the fans' full effort. You guys always do terrific. We had a great fan fest, obviously, to kick off the playoffs. about 2 weekends ago now, I suppose. But just a little heads up in terms of what's going on. There are some things of a Moda Center. I don't know if they necessarily conflict. I haven't seen the times of, like, the door times yet, but I know there's the Blazers' final regular season game this weekend, I believe on Friday. And then Saturday is that Nike Hoop Summit. You know, they bring over all the, I think it's under 18 top players.
Yep.
I think is what it is. You know, basically going on to college basketball or pro or the pro ranks. So just keep an eye if you want to get to the rink, get here a little early, give yourself some time. I know it's a struggle. We all recognize that we're trying our best to work with the building as well there. So just give yourself, you know, maybe 5-10 extra minutes to get into the rink that we don't miss any of the action. And I don't know, it's fun to have a U.S. division rivalry when you get the first, you know, top two teams in the U.S. division going off head-to-head in the semifinal round here in the Western Conference. It's always a good time. So I'm sure the Hawks fans will be ready. I'm certainly ready. I can't wait for puck drop in game one, and just excited to see how the beginning of the series goes.
Amen, brother. It's, you know, this is a team that has butted up against this round the last couple of years. They've been close to breaking through, haven't been able to do it. Hopefully the story ends differently this year and we get that Western Conference Finals coming here in a couple of weeks, but cannot wait to get started. I'll be there on Saturday. I'm sure the crowds are going to be great. As always, buddy, we appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing you in the hat in the rink this weekend, and fans are going to bring it. Let's get a 2-0 start, and we'll catch up again next episode when we're previewing the Western Conference Finals. How's that sound?
That sounds fantastic. Hopefully the team will get the job done for all of us there. And, hey, now we can go enjoy some Masters coverage. So for the fans tuning in, too, enjoy your Masters. Enjoy the Winterhawks round two.
All right, next up on the Portland Winterhawks podcast, making his debut on the Portland Winterhawks podcast is Josh Skreski, coming off a big first-round series as Portland gets ready to take on Everett this weekend, game one and game two here in round two. Josh, before we get to the round one win and what's coming up here in round two, we got to start with the important stuff. How's your Masters pool looking? Who did you pick? How's everything shaking out for you here on day one?
Yeah, we did a little team pool, and so I got grouped with Maury, Diego, and Spoonie.
Okay.
And those guys weren't very fired up about the whole Masters pool. They aren't very knowledgeable in it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a big stats guy, so I kind of just took over, and we ended up taking Brooks. We took Nick Taylor, Cameron Young, Justin Thomas.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, and then that Swedish guy, that Auberg.
Oh, yeah, Aubert, man. Yeah, the young stud.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think that was it. I can't remember who else.
Well, that's a pretty good group. You got a shot. Nobody has Bryson so far. I know this isn't good for podcasts because we're doing this, you know, recording it, and everybody's going to be like, whenever they listen, not know what the score is. But it's always fun. You guys have fun doing that and kind of bantering in the locker room in between practice about who got who and who's winning the pool?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of guys on the team that are big golfers and big golf fans. So it's definitely something that's a hot topic in the dressing room right now and usually is. And it's just fun. We can kind of chirp about each other and how their guys are doing. And it's just nice to have something to talk about too and kind of keep things fun in the room.
Yeah, kind of get your mind off hockey for a couple of minutes. Well, let's put the mind back on hockey. Walk me through just the opening round, man, and kind of what your mindset was going into the series. You guys take care of business. You get the game-winning goal in game four. Just how do you assess the way that you played and the way the team played there in the first round?
Yeah, I think, you know, from my standpoint, I think I was pretty good. I think there's a few things that I could have done better, I think, but it's kind of a learning process for me, and I'm still kind of figuring things out. But, yeah, I thought as a team, I think we're a bit nervous in the first game. I think we were so amped up and nervous, and there's a lot of excitement that I think for the first little bit in the game, I think we were just kind of shooting ourselves in the foot a little bit and kind of making the wrong plays. But I think as the game went on in game two and kind of game three, I think we kind of figured out how to play and kind of settle into what we're known as and what our identity is. And then I think, yeah, for game four, it was really nice at the line to get on the score sheet. I think kind of I was fighting the puck a little bit. Game two, three, I had a few chances. So it was really nice to be able to pot it and kind of help contribute from a score sheet kind of standpoint.
Well, and then, I mean, that you got a little taste of the playoffs last year, and everybody always says, and we can sense it watching, that, you know, playoff hockey, it's just different. It's different than the regular season. There's a different intensity. For the listeners and the people who don't get a chance to experience it, you mentioned the nerves and the tightness there in game one. Just kind of what's going on in your mind, the butterflies, you know, explain to people who don't play hockey, how is playoff hockey different than the regular season?
Yeah, it's intense. It's, you know, your season's on the line. You don't want to go home. I mean, it's kind of like a do or die. It's like, you know, everything's on the line, and guys are going all out because they don't want to lose. And there's, you know, a championship on the line. And so I think we just, it's kind of going through our mind is just it's do or die. And as a team, we think, and we've known that we're built for this moment and this kind of playoffs. And so I think a bit of that was a bit nerves and just not wanting to fail. I think it was, we were a bit nervous, but you kind of just got to push that aside. And at the end of the day, it's just another hockey game. But at the same time, it's a little bit bigger than that too.
Yeah, no doubt. How much did it help you kind of getting that taste of it last year? I know the season didn't end the way that you guys wanted it to, but how much did that help you kind of getting a couple of games and some rounds under your belt just to maybe settle your nerves a little bit this year?
Yeah, I think it was awesome. I think, you know, playing against Everett last year and winning in five, it was awesome. I helped contribute offensively a little bit. I was playing on the power play and got a chance to do that. But it was really nice to kind of experience how it is to win a round and win a series and move on to the next round. But then when we came up against Kamloops, I think we kind of learned that, you know, there is like a difference between skill levels and stuff. And, mm-hmm. and they kind of just outmatched us a little bit. And so I think, you know, this year, I think kind of we're built that way that Kamloops is. And so I think we're just excited. I think we want to be successful, and it's nice to get a few games under my belt last year. I think it was nice to just kind of feel it out and understand what it takes to play in the playoffs and how fast it is and all that. But yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, Nick and I were talking a bit ago about just kind of the wonky schedule. You guys are so used to playing, you know, so many games in a row and the 3-3s and a real grind there at the end of the regular season. And then you get through this sweep in the first round, you have a nice extended break. How has that been just, you know, physically and mentally in the locker room to be able to, you know, advance, know you're advancing, and then get a little bit of time away to not only rest your body, but rest your mind a little bit going into round two?
For sure. I think it's really important for us. You know, we had a really busy schedule towards the end of the season. I think we were probably one of the busier teams in the WHL mm-hmm. in terms of playing games. So it was really nice to kind of get this week off and kind of recoup a little bit. I think, you know, Mike was nice to us and gave us a couple days off, and we got to enjoy those and rest and relax and kind of enjoy time to ourselves. But, you know, since Sunday, we're back at the rink, and we've just been preparing and getting ready for the week ahead. And we kind of figured that Seattle was going to be our opponents. I mean, or sorry, not Seattle, Everett was going to be our opponents. And so, you know, once kind of they went up 2-1 on Vancouver, we were figuring that they were going to be our next round opponents. And so I think, you know, we're kind of preparing for that, and we kind of sensed that. And we've been kind of watching their games and trying to get a kind of a hint on how the guys play. And kind of, you know, we played a lot during the season. And so mm-hmm. I think we're familiar with them, but we're just trying to find an edge to kind of give us an advantage.
You mentioned, too, I mean, a U.S. division opponent, so you see him a ton in the regular season. You played him last year. I know the teams are a little bit different, obviously, as you point out, but you get him last year in the first round. What's kind of like, you know, to put your broadcasting hat on, what's the scouting report for Everett? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What are some of the things that you guys are kind of circling going into this series?
Yeah, they're a good team. They like to play their top guys. I think they're a fast team. You know, they got a really strong team. They got a lot of depth. They got a lot of really good players, and I think we're just gonna have to play our game. I think we're able to handle that. You know, I don't want to give out any weaknesses or make them mad or anything. So
smart.
I'm gonna keep that to ourselves and keep that in the room a little bit in terms of weaknesses. I think, you know, we don't want that getting out there, and I think we just want to keep that in the room. But I think in terms of their team, I think we got to give them respect. I think they're a good team. They're just behind us in standings. And so we're just got to come out and play the way we know how to. And I think we can be successful.
That's smart. Now, I tried to give you the bait there. That's smart to not take it. That shows, you know, the veteran experience that you have, all the years that you've been there. Keep that stuff in-house. I know the fans are excited for the series to start. I did want to ask you, man, I'm just curious, you know, the development at your level and the way that you've improved, and now knowing that you're getting ready for the draft this summer and your name's going to get called, how hard is that this time of year to kind of balance all of those different things of team success, you're wrapping up school, you're thinking about, I'm sure, the NHL draft from time to time? How hard is that to balance everything this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about getting my name called. I think, you know, that's still a hope for me. I mean, it's never a guarantee for sure. So I think for me, I'm hoping for it. But yeah, I mean, school has been really light. I mean, we're kind of focused on playoffs. So that's kind of my main focus. And that's kind of been the focus all year long, is just kind of to stay dialed in terms of, you know, the team. And but yeah, obviously you talked about kind of the NHL. And yeah, that's been a bit of big kind of a priority for me. But I don't want it to make it too big of a priority, because you know, whatever happens with the team and stuff is kind of my big, kind of my main focus, because, you know, whatever goes on here is kind of my personal thing. And so I think with school, it's been nice. You know, we've been dealing with that. And then, you know, with NHL draft, it's been good. But yeah, I'm just trying to keep that in the back of the head for sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You won the Scholastic Player of the Year award, right?
I did, yeah. That's my second year winning it.
Look at you.
It's been pretty.
That's pretty awesome. So what is, you know, what was the favorite class that you took this year? Was there a subject that you were most interested in?
Yeah, I think it's probably marketing. I'm taking a marketing class right now. And so it's been nice to kind of, you know, learn something that I could honestly relate towards real life. I mean, it's, marketing is all over the place in the world. So it's been awesome. And it's my built mom. She's kind of works in that marketing area of stuff. So it's been nice to be able to come home and she understands what I'm talking about.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. Congrats on the award. Last but definitely not least important, how did the Peaky Blinder hat thing come about? And how do you judge the way that you look in one of those hats? Because that's been kind of become your guys' calling card here in the playoffs.
You know what? I don't even know. I'm when those college guys, those guys cook up some weird stuff. And so we were on the bus and we just got handed a sheet that said Peaky Blinders hat size and it said our numbers. And so I just had to write down my hat size and roll with it. I didn't really understand what was going on, but I mean, I like it. It's kind of a cool little thing going on. I feel like it gives us kind of a little identity, and I don't think many other teams do that in the league, which is why I think it's cool. It's not something that happens very often, and so I think it's really cool. And then in terms of dress, and I think you got to kind of find a way around it. I mean, you're not going to dress exactly like the Shelby family there at the Peaky Blinders, but I think, you know, because it's, you might sweat a little bit with all the coats and the coats there, or those pea coats. But I think, you know, it's kind of just, I think it kind of finishes with the outfits a little bit that we got going. So I think it's been really cool.
That's awesome, man. I love the backstory there. You just kind of show up. This is what you're wearing. You say, okay, that's what we're doing for the playoffs. It's definitely a good look. I know the fans have loved it. And hey, man, first off, good luck in the Masters pool. Hopefully you guys prevail. And then I know you guys are psyched to get round two going. Best of luck against Everett. And thanks for the time hopping on the pod, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you. I help you look at him and said, yes, you can. Yeah.